having like a like an old school Tyler Mon, Anthony Masterson morning. I got Dunkin' Donuts for breakfast today, which I used to do going into the ballpark in Myrtle in 2010 because I needed a coffee the size of a drum in order to see you first thing in the morning.
That's fair. I used to go to Subway and get of those like flatbread sandwiches until I got one morning with jalapenos on it. And my face broke out in hives.
Ew, really?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, I'm not going to go to that Subway anymore. And I get jalapenos. I'm not, like, allergic to spice or anything like that. I get jalapenos all the time on everything. That one day I got them broke out in hives, I was like, I'm not going to go there anymore.
Yeah, cool. No, it's the Subway in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, now with more norovirus.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I don't think it had to do with the jalapenos. I think it had to do with the fact that it was Subway in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Yeah, I kind of forgot about that. You know what's weird? Like, I can envision that Subway, but I don't remember where it was exactly.
Yeah, right off that one street by
everything
the,
was
by
named,
the beach.
Like, the same... In Myrtle Beach, there's Highway 17, which is actually two different highways, and they are two very different stretches of town. There's Highway 17 Business and Highway 17 Bypass, and like, so when you would have to tell people, like, oh, it's on 17, they'd be like, which one? No, yeah, that's right. This is a smartly designed city.
Only thing I remember is Dagwoods.
Oh, God, how I miss it.
I know exactly where Dagwoods is.
The other day, a friend, Brian Sipsick, who was there the year before you, sent me and another one of our friends, Brendan Rose, the senator, sent us a picture from Dagwoods, which is the world. Like, there's not many places in Myrtle Beach that I legitimately miss. Like, I miss that time because that was a very fun stretch of life, but I don't really miss Myrtle Beach itself. But that is, like, the one place. If I could trade out a place here for Dagwoods, I would do it in a heartbeat.
Well, yeah, I could trade a lot of places for that.
Yeah, but like you would think being in a, you know, relatively cosmopolitan, somewhat major metropolitan city, I wouldn't really think like, oh man, if only I could have that sandwich place from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, but I totally would.
Oh yeah. I would go to war for Dagwoods.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like people here think Snarf's is good, and Snarf's is decent.
That's fine.
Yeah, but
it's like,
Dagwoods
like half fast if you're in Boulder, it's fine.
Right. Like, yeah. Dagwoods is like infinite, like blows Snarf's out of the water.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it's amazing. The Bubba's Kicking Chicken. That was my.
That was
my
jam.
Oh, I love
it. So anyway,
hey, howdy.
We're a Rockies podcast.
We're a Rockies podcast. We're not a foodie podcast. I feel like we'd be good at being a foodie podcast though.
We would just be like, oh my God, this is so
good. Oh, it's so good.
Oh God,
food is delicious. So hey, welcome in the 112th episode of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast from the good folks at Purple Row and us. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And your Colorado Rockies coming off of a 10-5 loss to the New York Mets last night. They led 5-0 and then they no longer led and then they lost.
Blame Kerwin Danley for
Derwin Canley. Yeah, Kerwin Danley got blasted by a weird pitch from Tyler Chatwood that he bounced 51 feet away from home plate that then bounced up and caught Kerwin Danley like right in the hand, like flush on the outside, like the hammock bone. It's really going to hamper his power swing coming back.
Yeah, so like that's, you know, it's hard to blame Chatwood because it was kind of his fault that like Kerwin Danley got out of the game. So it's like, oh, well, he's going to understand the new umpire. It's like,
maybe you shouldn't have blasted the last one with a pitch.
You shouldn't have thrown a ball 48 feet.
Yeah, not great.
Speaking of not great, Tyler Chatwood is not great.
Tyler Chatwood is not great. Speaking of other things that are not great, just saw this headline. Former Dodgers co-owner Jamie McCourt to be named ambassador to France.
Sure, why not?
Oh, God. Let's just continue getting the most embarrassing people to be associated with Major League Baseball in the last 20 years are just getting ambassadorships all over the world. Wasn't Jeffrey Loria? Wasn't he supposed to be ambassador to France?
Something, yeah.
Okay, anyway. So, last night, Tyler Chatwood, not good. Going to talk about that.
No.
You're coming up in a little bit. We're going to talk about Carlos Gonzalez, who we talked about last week, and I don't know, man. Cargo's eating up.
It's getting hot.
Cargo's getting hot.
Getting close.
It's getting it going. And we will also review the Major League Baseball trade deadline, which is now in the rearview mirror. And before we do that, thanks for finding the old PDP today, wherever you did, on iTunes and on the Stitcher app and elsewhere. You can find our shirts, purpledinosaurpodcast.bigcartel.com, and you can get in touch with the show, purpledinosaurpodcast@gmail.com, and also on Twitter. Anthony is at Master Tones, and I am at Tyler Mon. And, yeah. So, okay, deadline behind us. Rockies did some work. Some decent work, I think. It was a pair of moves that the Rockies really didn't give up much. In one case, they literally have not given up anything yet. They will at one point. But you give away a trio of prospects for Pat Neshek. I think it's a great deal. And then the Rockies acquire Jonathan Lucroy, the catcher formerly of the Texas Rangers, who has had a very down year and may not actually exist, because since he came to Denver, he has not played. He was in the lineup 2 days ago and then was scratched with a quote-unquote stomach ailment, so maybe he's not actually real. Maybe he's
too much Coors
along with David Dahl somewhere, or drinking too much Coors.
We'll talk about David Dahl in a second too.
We will. But yeah, I mean, we talked about the possibility of a Lucroy thing last week, along with maybe Alex Avila, maybe some of these other names that were bandied about in trade rumors for catchers. I have long thought that the Lucroy move would be the smartest move, because since he was having such a down year, it didn't seem like they would have to give up much for him. And if you want to see a guy rebound offensively, this is the place to do it. Will it happen? I don't know. He's regressed tremendously on the defensive side, which is also weird. But I like that move a lot, and they gave up literally no one as of yet. They traded him for one player to be named later, and that player has yet to be named. There was some initial confusion. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports had tweeted out that it was possible the Rockies were going to trade away one of their 2017 trade acquisitions, because the way Major League Baseball
The
way Major League Baseball announced that those guys could be traded was a little bit confusing. If you'll remember, a couple of years ago, Trey Turner was included in a trade from the San Diego Padres to the Washington Nationals, basically right after he was drafted in the June draft in 2015. But the rules were those players cannot actually be traded until 1 year after the draft. So Trey Turner knew by the end of his first professional season that he was no longer going to be with the Padres, and then had to finish out that season, go through the entire offseason, go through spring training, and start the next season in the Padres organization before he could be traded in June of the following year.
Sure, so makes total sense.
Right, exactly. They changed that rule. Now, players can be traded in their draft year, but not until after the World Series. The way it was written out in an explanation of the rule, it kind of sounded on one hand like they could be traded, they just couldn't be named in official trades until after the World Series, but they actually cannot even be included in trades until after the World Series. So it's not a 2017 draft selection that the Rockies will be dealing away. So it's somebody in the minor league system, but that's all you got to give up for Jonathan Lucroy. I mean, unless it's Ryan McMahon, which it's not.
When was the last time that we had a trade deadline where the Rockies did something? We were all like pretty much universally,
I like this,
saying, oh, you know what? It's pretty good.
This seems pretty
good. When was the last time that ever happened for us with the Rockies at the trade deadline? Usually they either do nothing or blow it up like trading too low.
Right. I don't think it was ever that way.
So I think the fact that they had two areas of need, they needed another bullpen arm, they needed a catcher, because their catching position has been an absolute black hole offensively this year. And I think they addressed those in two very, very low-key trades. I think Jonathan Lucroy deal, if he comes and is the guy he was last year when he was an all-star with the Brewers, he had 24 bombs, he hit 292. I mean, he can
literally. Yeah, that was just last year.
That was just last year. He split time between the Brewers and Texas. I guess he got traded midseason. But still, there's no reason why he would have regressed so horribly this year. But unless he got like Carlos Gonzalez disease, I mean, I don't know what else could have really happened to make him just fall off the table that quickly.
Speaking of which, so last night, for the last few months, I've been going through Seinfeld episode 1 through the finale. So I'm currently in season 8, and last night was the episode where George is trying to get fired from the Yankees because the Mets want him to be the director of pro scouting, which doesn't make any sense because George has no experience in scouting anyway. So George goes into a meeting wearing Babe Ruth's old jersey, attempting to get fired from the Yankees. He, like, pulled Babe Ruth's old jersey out of a display case at Yankee Stadium. He wears it into a meeting. He's eating strawberries and, like, dripping the strawberries all over the jersey and then wiping his hands on it, trying to get fired. So, a couple scenes later, he's meeting with George Steinbrenner, played by Larry David, And Steinbrenner makes a comment about how it was just what this organization needed, that George walked into a meeting and was so disrespectful and irreverent, whatever. And then Steinbrenner stands up and goes, how about these? Lou Gehrig's pants. And then a minute later, he goes, you don't think that nerve disease he had was contagious, do you? I better take these off. We don't need Big Stein flopping and twitching. How offensive is that? Talking about ALS. Like, I never, when I first saw that episode, I don't think I really realized, like, the implications of actual Lou Gehrig's disease. Now I was like, good God. That's, like, one of the most offensive things I've ever heard on that show.
I think it's because everyone knew that universally George Steinbrenner was a dick.
And would probably have actually said that.
And would probably have said that, so... I'm pretty sure that's where it stemmed from.
Can't have Big Stein flopping and twitching. It's like, God almighty, this is atrocious. But anyway, so, I mean, Jonathan Lucroy is, if you want a bounce back candidate, he's got a proven track record. I think I would rather, and there's definitely an argument to be made in the inverse of this, but I think I would rather have somebody like Jonathan Lucroy, proven track record of being a very well above average catcher in Major League Baseball in a down year. Then somebody
still just 31.
Right.
Yeah.
Then somebody like Alex Avila, who has had a proven track record of not being that good, is just having a breakout year this year.
Completely agree.
So I love that deal. And Pat Neshek, I love that deal. We talked about that last week, but they had two areas in need. They acquired two very good pieces for both of those areas. And the thing that I like the most is they didn't go crazy. And we had this conversation with some people on Twitter, but they didn't go crazy in throwing prospects and talent out at possible trade acquisitions and getting wrapped up in being a buyer in 2017. Because I think in the organization, they still view 2018 as the real start of when this team is set for the window.
Yeah.
So yeah. I like that. I really like that.
Yeah, I completely agree. And this team was built to start contending in 2018. They may be a year ahead. We'll see by the end of the year. But, you know, all signs point to them being that team right now, considering the rest of the NL is so terrible. And if, you know, they can basically, if they play basically 500 ball the rest of the year, they're going to make the playoffs. But they have to play 500 ball.
Yeah.
And that's, and therein lies the issue.
You know,
they have not really done that lately.
Yeah.
But, you know, a win today. We're recording this on Thursday, August 3rd. Before the game, there's a day game at Coors Field this afternoon. Rafael Montero taking on Germán Márquez. If they win that game, it'll be back-to-back series victories against two NL East teams. And, you know, Philly's coming in this weekend, the worst team in the National League. Yeah, there's a moment here for the Rockies that they want to take a little step, because the D-backs aren't playing that well right now. The Brewers have been really bad over the last few weeks. They can really make some separation if they wanted. Even the Dodgers lost last night. And that's, you know, that's something that's never happened.
Right. The Rockies in April were 6 games over 500. In May, they were 5. In June, they were 3. And in July, they played 500 ball. If you continue to do that, if you continue to play 500 ball or better, and they're 1-1 through the first two games of August, you're going to be a playoff team. And it's not...
That's 500. That's 500.
That is 500. It's right on at 500. It's not that the... it's not really predicated on the Rockies being a great team if you go from July through the end of the season only playing 500 ball that they'll make the playoffs. But there's nobody else in the National League right now that really looks like a threat. The Brewers have been tailing off. The Cardinals are not good. The Marlins have actually played the best of the teams that are chasing down the Rockies, and Lord knows they're not that good of a team. And all these other teams behind them, the Pirates, there's nothing really remarkable about that team. The Mets.
No, they've lost 8-10.
The Mets are a dumpster fire. You know, I don't really see the Rockies. If the Rockies are going to blow a playoff spot now, either the Brewers have to start playing like they did in April, which I really don't see happening. Eric Thames has cooled off. Ryan Braun has, you know, been Ryan Braun, but we haven't seen anybody on that roster take over since April. And I just don't, you know, the Cardinals and the Marlins and the Pirates, those teams aren't making a run. So the Rockies would have to just vomit all over themselves in order to miss the playoffs at this stage.
But hey, it's happened.
It's possible. I just don't, you know, I don't see it. The thing that has been frustrating over the last few weeks is the D-backs have not played well either. And no. The Rockies have missed this opportunity to jump on a possible gap that you could create. When the D-backs won that series over the Rockies on July 2nd, there were 21 games over 500 at 52-31. They're now 15 games over at 61-46.
They went 10-14 in July.
Yeah, like they have not played good ball as of late. And it's not like they lost series to great teams either. They lost three straight to the Braves. They got swept by the Braves coming out of the All-Star break. They did lose a series to Washington. Then they split a series with St. Louis at the end of July. Like they haven't played great. They lost a series to the Reds at home. So that's not a great team. And that kind of surprised me because I felt like that team was going to continue to push the Dodgers. I figured the D-backs would be, you know, way more in that race than the Rockies would be at this stage. But there's an opportunity if the Rockies get on a streak, and we've talked about this a lot before, the Rockies have an opportunity to get on a streak against bad opponents that should theoretically give them some breathing room. They got the Phillies coming into town, then they're at Cleveland and at Miami. I don't think that trip is going to be easy because the Indians, even though the Indians have struggled this year, it's still a pretty talented team. The Rockies never really play well in Miami, but then they come home for seven straight against the Braves and Brewers. And then at the end of the month, they get the Braves and the Tigers. They have a series at Kansas City sandwiched in there, but I mean, they should be able to make some ground. But they got to get something figured out because this team has been very inconsistent of late.
Now, the one stretch I'm looking at in September is an 8-game road trip, September 7th to September 14th, 4 games in Chavez Ravine and 4 games at Chase Field. That is going to be a road trip that could literally make or break
the
season. If you go 1-7 on that 8-game road trip or something along those lines, that is very, very tough to come back from in mid-September.
Especially against the two teams that you are either chasing or trying to hold off.
Yeah.
It's one thing if you do that against the Nationals and, you know, whoever else. But if you're going to do that against the Dodgers and the D-backs, not great.
That's
tough. So, I mean, that's big. That is a series that you need to – or that is a trip that you need to build yourself a little bit of a cushion going into. I don't know if that's going to happen, but that would be tremendous if the Rockies could at least play, you know, at – 650 winning percentage for a couple of series going into that, but yeah,
wouldn't suck.
Not gonna be easy. So let's the deadline, you know, I think we're pretty universal in our praise, which, like you said, when the hell was the last time that anybody would have thought that?
Yep.
So that's a tremendous positive for a team that we're not used to really discussing positives about when it comes to the trade deadline or any other acquisitions. But that brings us to one of the issues, which is glaring after last night, and that is the rotation. Tyler Chatwood, last night, you thought to yourself through the first four innings, man, Tyler Chatwood looking pretty solid. And then not so much. The Rockies led 5-0 after the third. Even after the fourth, it's a 5-2 game. Then Chatwood gives up two in the fifth. Then the Mets score 6 in the 6th and roll on to a 10-5 victory. Tyler Chatwood's final line, 5 1/3, 7 hits, 8 runs, 7 earned, 2 homers, 2 strikeouts, 1 walk. The home runs went Jay Bruce. Okay, sure. Curtis Granderson. Grandy hits a 3-run homer in that spot. Curtis Granderson, I have long liked as a baseball player, but that is not a home run you can be giving up. Just not a good series.
Oh, it was not. And Tyler Chatwood, you see each time through the lineup, he gets progressively worse and worse. And that is if he actually makes it one time through the lineup. Last time he faced the Mets, yep, he did not. Opponent OPS first time through the lineup for Tyler Chatwood this year is 666, which is telling. Because it rises up to 835 the second time through and 979 the third time through.
It starts off with a number of the devil.
And I won't even say the fourth time through because he hasn't even barely made it there this year. So Tyler Chatwood wanted to cement himself in that rotation, say, hey, I can still pitch. I can still help this team win. And I'm still not sure if that's the case at all. You look at, especially at Coors Field. I mean, look at his Coors Field numbers the last 2 years. Like pitcher wins, he's 6-14 with an ERA of 6.36. In 23 starts, in 24 road starts in that time, pitcher wins 12-7. He has 2.64 ERA on the road. Mike Petriello had a theory earlier this year, yeah, where why couldn't the Rockies just finagle the pitching schedule so he wouldn't pitch at Coors Field?
Right.
He said there's, you know, there are ways to do it. If you have to have one every like month or so, whatever, you have to do it. But there are ways to finagle it with the way the baseball schedule works, with how many starting pitchers the Rockies actually have.
With the 10-day disabled list, with the depth and starters that they have right now.
Yeah, they're running through 6-7 starters basically deep if they want to put Senzatella in there for a spot start or something along those lines. He cannot pitch at Coors Field. It is a thing with Tyler Chatwin now. It is not a one season aberration where you just kind of roll through and go, oh, okay, well, he'll be better next year, like a reliever. No, that's not what it is. He literally has something he cannot pitch at Coors Field. It is too much at this point.
And you cannot afford that in a playoff race.
No.
You can't afford to lose games like that last night when you're 5 runs up on the Mets, a bad Mets team. And you blow that game. And you didn't blow it. I mean, yeah, it's Yoenis Cespedes contributed. But, like, you didn't blow it strictly to Yoenis Cespedes. You gave up a 3-run go-ahead homer to Curtis Granderson. Jay Bruce is crushing the ball over the yard. And Jay Bruce has had a good year. But, like, it's one thing if you let another team's best players beat you. You still don't want to. But that's one thing. But when you're allowing the Curtis Grandersons of the world to come in and own you at Coors Field, you just can't have it anymore. I do think that Tyler Chatwood is valuable enough on the road that they can look to get him work on the road. But I also think at this stage, this is what I would propose. At this stage, I know you want to monitor his innings. I know you want to keep him down. And I know that he hasn't been great either. But what is the harm in putting Antonio Senzatella in the rotation at home, where he is 8-2 with a 4.68 ERA this year, and Tyler Chatwood in the bullpen is your long guy, and switching them when they're on the road? We saw Senzatella last night come in a relief role, 3 innings, 1 hit, 4 strikeouts, no walks. He looked great. We've talked for a long time about how well a bullpen role could serve him, but why not have that? It's kind of like a bizarro piggyback situation where one guy goes in the starting role at home, the other guy goes in the bullpen, and then they switch on the road. Something like that. I don't know. I mean, it's very unconventional, obviously, but you're not getting anything from Tyler Chatwood at home.
No, but Senzatella hasn't been that great at home either. You know, the pitcher wins record looks nice because he's gotten a lot of run support.
ERA is better than Tyler Chatwood's.
2 runs better than Tyler Chatwood, but that's, you know, that's not saying a lot.
I mean, a 4.68 ERA at home at Coors Field is not bad.
It's still not good, but in my opinion, Senzatella is much better served to just be in the bullpen right now. I think the Rockies need a lot more help in the bullpen than they do anything else. And his profile with the fastball in the high 90s and the slider and really not much else, it suits him a lot better to be coming out of the bullpen and being that guy like we saw last night. Came in, I know it was a 5-run game. The Rockies really had nothing to play for at that point, but he came in and looked dominant in 3 innings. I mean, he's made 4 appearances out of the bullpen this year. Spanning 8 innings, he's allowed 2 hits. He struck out 9 in that time. I think we're seeing where Antonio Senzatella is finally going to end up in the major leagues, because he is a major league arm. I just don't think he's a starter. And so it'd be a lot easier if Tyler Chatwood was, you know, at least pulling his weight a little bit, but that's just not the case anymore. So I understand where the argument comes in, where Senzatella might be that guy if he wants to come in and start, and Chatwood can piggyback off of him and vice versa. But I think we just need to make Antonio Senzatella the bullpen guy right now and just move on from there.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. I mean, I don't. There are, you know, ways that you can finagle, you know, like Mike Petriello's argument was, that you can finagle the rotation between the DL, options, days off, that type of stuff, where you can make him a guy who doesn't start at home. But I think there has to be a solution to it. I don't think it can be, okay, well, we'll figure out what's going on next week to be at the doorstep of next week. We'll tell you what the plan is for next week. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I think they have to have something that's more set in stone than that.
Well, I mean, his next start's supposed to be in Cleveland facing off with Carlos Carrasco. Yeah. So
should be better. In theory, can't be worse, really, than last night.
I mean,
we'll see how that continues to operate. The other thing is, right now, the Rockies don't really have much in the way of relief talent at Albuquerque. And this is a question that popped up last night on Twitter, because the conventional wisdom has kind of always been, you know, especially in the case of somebody like Jordan Lyles, how much worse is it really going to be if you go grab somebody from Albuquerque and you throw them out there?
They have not called up hardly anybody this year from Albuquerque.
No, Scott Oberg comes in last night, gives up two runs in two-thirds of an inning. He's not good. But, you know, I mean, as far as relief talent goes in Albuquerque, there's really not anybody who's just blowing the doors off this year. Carlos Estevez has been very good in Albuquerque, hasn't been great at the major league level this year. Austin House has been terrific. That's about it. Matt Caricitti, they traded away. Zach Roscup has been good, and he was called up as the 26th man for the doubleheader the other day. But, you know, he's in somewhat unproven commodity. I shouldn't say he's been good. I should say he's been great, because throughout his eight games in the Rockies organization so far, he has yet to allow a run over 9 1/3 innings. But there just aren't that many options in Albuquerque right now.
Yeah, and I know it's Albuquerque, so you have to take a lot of the numbers with a grain of salt when it comes to the ERAs, but it's a lot of guys with fives and sixes, not even like high threes and fours.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there just aren't very many easy solutions. I think that's the real issue right now when you look at the way this bullpen is constructed. How it's going to bear itself out is, are you going to continue to give high leverage situations and high leverage innings to guys like Scott Oberg? The Rockies have been somewhat hampered the last couple of days because Greg Holland hasn't been available. And that means that you have to structure your bullpen differently, because if you're not going to get to Greg Holland at the end, then you have to plan on getting to Adam Ottavino or Mike Dunn or somebody else. Jake McGee is on the DL right now. So the fact that Scott Oberg is in that spot last night is a little bit different, because you don't have a full complement of your pieces in the bullpen. But still, when you get into August and September, Scott Oberg can't be the guy that you're turning to in those spots.
No, but it's considering how long they stuck with Jordan Lyles on the
right.
team. You know, it's a safe bet. We're going to see a lot more Scott Oberg before we don't,
yeah,
you know,
it's going to get worse before it gets better. Scott Oberg this year in 48 relief appearances, 48 relief appearances 48. For Scott Oberg, which is, I believe, a team high. Could that be right? Yeah, it is. Scott Oberg has 48.
Good for him.
Appearances. Adam Ottavino has 42, and he's got second most on the roster. No, Mike Dunn, 45, is second most on the roster, and then Adam Ottavino at 42. But Scott Oberg, a 5.83 ERA this year. Opponents are batting .318 against Scott Oberg.
Glad he was in there in a one-run game last night in the sixth inning.
Boy. Yeah. So... That's where the conversation really needs to settle right now for the Rockies, is if you get to the playoffs, there's no guarantee that all these dudes are going to be healthy when you get to the playoffs. If you get to the playoffs and somebody like a Jake McGee or an Adam Ottavino or, God forbid, a Greg Holland goes down, then what are you looking at in the bullpen? And yes, in the postseason, it can be different. Maybe you move some of these guys into a relief role. Maybe you have a Kyle Freeland or a Herman Marquez or a Jeff Hoffman or somebody who's not in the rotation who can give you some innings out of the bullpen. But still, if you get to the postseason and you are looking at Scott Oberg to try to hold, let's say, a two-run game close against the Dodgers in the seventh in L.A., you feel pretty good about that?
Nope.
I don't think so.
No, I don't.
So...
It's funny for Oberg, his ERA, or his FIP is like more than two runs lower than his actual ERA this year. His FIP is actually 3.62, which is very good. Amazing, considering his WHIP is nearly two. That's tough to do. They must really like something about Scott Oberg.
Interesting.
I mean, he's got nearly a strikeout per inning, fine. But I'm not sure where that big disparity there is, you know.
Who knows?
Strikes out 20% of his batters he faces. Okay.
Who knows, man? It's so weird. It's so weird. And it's so enraging, because sometimes you'll see Scott Oberg go out for an inning and think like, man.
You're like, wow.
That was pretty good. Yeah. And just not very often. Not very often. So I guess we'll kind of see the way those things go with Tyler Chatwood and things like Scott Oberg. But that brings us to one Carlos Gonzalez, who has the world's strangest and most underwhelming 11-game hitting streak underway right now, in which of the last seven games he has registered one hit And in 8 of the 11, he has registered one hit. And in the other 3, he's registered 2 hits.
Raising his average on the season to 229.
Spiking
and
from
OPS
214.
To 650.
Cargo last night, I will say, hit a two-run homer that I have no idea how he hit, but he obliterated a two-run homer off of Chris Flexen to dead center field with two outs in the third inning. That put the Rockies up at that time, 5-0, and you felt pretty good about things. Ah, it's the Mets. They're up 5-0. They got this one. But it's... it's certainly, we're definitely not at a stage where you think to yourself, man, Cargo's getting it going. And maybe, you know, from small acorns grow big trees. Maybe a 7 straight one hit game type of streak out of an 11 game hitting streak. Maybe he is about to get hot. But we have been saying Cargo's got to get it going for almost 4 months.
Oh, he's feeling it. About to be there.
Yep. I don't know. I don't know what to make of this. I don't know, you know, and we talked about it last week. I have no idea how a player just falls apart from one year to the next, but there's no power profile. He's not even really getting on base. I mean, over the course of this hitting streak, his on-base percentage since the third game of the hitting streak has gone from 301 to 303. Okay. And, like, he's taken walks here and there. Like, that's been relatively good to see, I guess, but... you know, Cargo this year has homered 7 times in 314 at-bats. He's driven
it was his first homer since June 20th last night. June 20th! It's August. It was August 2nd.
And that...
that's Carlos Gonzalez.
Exactly, that's Carlos Gonzalez. Like, that's the way that it enters your brain and you think to yourself, like, there's no way that's possible. He's one of the all-time greats in franchise history. He has 6 RBIs away from Coors Field this year. He's batting 194 on the road, which means he's only batting 268 at home, and he's 31 years old.
He's only 31.
How in the hell has this happened? And like we talked about last week, like maybe it is something physical. Maybe it is an injury of some kind. But the thing that worries me is at this stage, you know, leading into the trade deadline is when the hitting streak started. And it was at 9 games, actually, right before the deadline. And there had been some pop. He had 3 doubles over the first 4 games of this streak. It looked like, you know, maybe he's starting to barrel the ball up a little bit more. But does a Carlos Gonzalez, who was hitting 230 and stringing together a single or a double, you know, once a game for the course of a lame hitting streak, does he keep himself in the lineup that way? That's what sort of worries me.
Well... all signs
point
to yes.
Yeah, at this stage, obviously, like you kind of felt like, all right, at some point they're going to have to realize that this is not doable, but it didn't look that way.
Raimel Tapia is still hitting 301 at the big league level this year and 113 at bats.
He's been back in the major league roster and has pinch hit over the last 2 nights.
Barely been used.
You know,
So he started twice since then. He went 0-for-4 one time, but in the doubleheader. But at the first game, he started in the doubleheader. He went 2-for-5 with a double and a run, RBI.
Oh man, I don't know how to explain it, and it's. I think the umbrella that the conversation for today's episode is coming under is that we are now really a month away from the actual stretch run in Major League Baseball, which starts the beginning of September. Rosters expand, and you kind of figure out these are the horses that we have in the stable. These are the guys we have to ride to get to the playoffs and see what we can do if we make it into that one game against the D-backs.
Commitment to that metaphor.
Thank you. If you're the Rockies front office, that's your approach right now. This is what we have. This is how we have to go forward, etc. But on August 3rd, you look at this roster and you think, like, this is what they're going with in these given situations? Like, they're not having this conversation about this spot or about this guy or about this situation. And that, when you look at putting 162 games on the table in game 163, doesn't make you feel great about it. If you're contending for a division title, you think to yourself, okay, we'll make it in. It's a 5-game series. You can get away with some shaky situations. But if you get into game 163 and you're up a run against the D-backs and it's the 6th or 7th inning and you're turning to Scott Oberg, you don't feel great.
Nope. You sure don't.
You don't feel great. Or and this is what's turned into such a gigantic bummer this year. If it's the sixth or seventh inning against the D-backs and you're down a run and you have the bases loaded and one out and Carlos Gonzalez is coming to the plate, all you're hoping for is don't roll over to second base, don't roll over to second base, don't roll over to second base, which happens way too often. So
this year, Carlos Gonzalez is hitting 176 with runners in scoring position.
Oh, God. His splits,
one,
I mean.
176.
Every single
split.
Last
year, he hit
him.
311.
He played in 17 games in June, and he batted 172 with a 587 OPS. And you think, like, well, it's bound to get better in every other month. 610 was his OPS in July. His best OPS for any month this year was 706 in May.
Oh, God.
I mean, ugh, Lord. And maybe it is just a case of hit him lower in the order. In 19 games batting sixth this year, he's batting 279 with a 708 OPS. Four games batting seventh, he's at 1021 OPS. That's not the solution. You know, that stuff doesn't really matter. It's more chance than anything. But, God, runners on base, 174 average. Runners on with two outs, 149 average. Runners in scoring position, 176,
stop,
like you said.
Stop.
Runners
he's
in scoring position
dead.
With two outs, 159 average, 552 OPS. I don't know. I don't know. It's... This is our fourth season of doing this podcast, and I think the thing that we've said most often is like we just present a problem and then go, I don't know how you fix it. that's kind of where we've gotten.
You know who doesn't need fixing? Nolan Arenado.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's good at the baseball.
Nolan Arenado, he is on his way to his fifth straight gold glove, which is fine to start his career.
Not
it's okay.
Bad. Not bad. Keith Hernandez last night called him the clear-cut leader for the National League MVP.
You know, we've had that discussion on MLB Whip Around quite a bit, and like the conversation goes to, is it Harper, Arenado, Goldschmidt? You got to have somebody from the Dodgers at this point, so Bellinger, Seager,
yeah,
you know, one of those
two
guys.
Yeah, I think Bellinger's definitely in that conversation.
I mean, you look at wins above replacement, Anthony Rendon's number one,
which is kind of crazy. Because nobody, if you looked at that Nationals team, unless you are a regular observer of that team, you're not going to think like, Rendon should probably be in that conversation over Bryce Harper. But
no, so let's do a little NL MVP convo.
Okay.
So right now, here is where the National League wins above replacement standings lie. Anthony Rendon, number one at 5.2. Nolan Arenado, number two, 4.8. Corey Seager right behind him. Paul Goldschmidt right behind him. Must be percentage points behind those two guys. Then Bryce Harper rolls in number five. He's at 4.6 with Justin Turner right behind him. Now, Justin Turner being there is interesting because he's missed quite a bit of time. But Nolan Arenado right there at number two in the National League behind Anthony Rendon. Will Nolan Arenado get the requisite pub and the requisite adulation to get the Rockies and get him into the NL MVP conversation this year?
I think so because Nolan has done this now for several straight years. If this was a situation where we're in the second year of his career and he's blowing up offensively and people don't really know what to make of him as of yet, then I would say probably not. But I think the fact that he's done this for several straight seasons puts him more in that conversation.
He's finished eighth and fifth the last two seasons, respectively, in the NL MVP voting.
The thing about Nolan, too, is like he has – the dog is saying hi. She just ran in here
like
and very spooked about
something. Hi, like
– very strange. But he, the fact that he's gotten a lot more recognition in recent years, because as much as it sucks, like voters for awards on the East Coast, they go to bed before they watch the Rockies play in San Francisco or Los Angeles or San Diego or even in Denver. So Nolan has to be the guy who puts himself in the conversation every night, being on MLB Network or being on SportsCenter or being on FS1 with highlight reel plays, hitting walk-offs, that type of stuff, because he's not going to just be in the conversation because he plays in New York or Washington or Philadelphia or wherever. The fact that he's done that now for four or five straight years is a tremendous asset because I do think that it puts him in the conversation in a legitimate sense since they're winning this year. That being said, the Dodgers are a much sexier story. Corey Seager has had a freakish season, as always. Cody Bellinger has been the same way. Even Justin Turner this year has been a freak. Yeah. So I think Nolan will be in that conversation, but, you know, he's going to be hampered by the fact that he plays at Coors Field, which is ridiculous because Nolan's numbers this year away from Coors Field are really damn good. Nolan away is a .294 hitter with an .889 OPS. He's hit 11 of his 24 homers away from Coors Field, so it's not like he is just a product of the ballpark. So the conversation is still going to be there, but I do think he would be, if the season ended today, I think he's at least a top three finisher.
Yeah, so I get to work with a lot of national talent, obviously, and so it's hard for any kind of Rockies player persona, whatever, to break into the national consciousness in any way, you know, because of where they play, because the Rockies are usually pretty bad. But Nolan Arenado, he really has transcended that, in my opinion, because you see what he does on the defensive end, and we do a highlight show. Every single night there's Nolan Arenado highlight at third base. Something that makes you go, oh my God, how did he do that? That does not happen a lot. So getting him in that area, that's the biggest thing right there, is that seeing him on these highlight shows and then seeing what he's doing offensively, seeing the walk-off home run, seeing the walk-off hits. He's got two walk-off hits this year, including the cycle and then one on Tuesday night. You're seeing what he does offensively because you know that's what it's going to be. You know he's led the National League in home runs and RBI each of the last 2 years. He's going to lead in RBI again. What do we say about RBI? Who cares? People notice those kinds of things.
Yeah, and voters still vote on those types of stats in a lot of circumstances.
Right, and the fact that the Rockies were garbage last year and he finished fifth in NL MVP voting, the fact he's having his best season of his career right now, on his way to his fifth straight Gold Glove to begin his career, how young he still is, how charismatic he is making a national name for himself. And people are starting to stand up and respect that. You look at the guys who have led the National League in RBI at least three times and whatever, say which one of RBI, I'm not an RBI guy. I know it's a function of opportunity. I know this. I'm just saying it doesn't happen a lot for a guy to lead a league in RBI, especially the National League in RBI three times. It's only done it
twice before.
Only eight players before have led the RBI and the NL and RBI three times, at least.
And he's led the National League in home runs and RBIs and total bases for the last 2 years, which has only happened two other times in National League history.
Well, look at these names. So only three guys who have done it four times: Hank Aaron, Rogers Hornsby, and Mike Schmidt in the National League. Done it four times.
Never heard of
done it three times. Johnny Bench, George Foster, Ryan Howard, Joe Medwick, and Johnny Mize. Nolan would join that list this year if he leads the NL and RBI.
Former Broncos offensive tackle George Foster.
That is it. That is it in the National League history. That's it. Most of those guys are Hall of Famers. And then Ryan Howard.
Poor Ryan Howard. Talk about Carlos Gonzalez disease. Although Ryan Howard, even when he was good, you were like, man, there's a lot of holes in that guy's game.
He also literally split his ACL in half. Or his Achilles in half.
Achilles. Gross. I mean, that's
what I'm getting at right now. I like the fact that Nolan Arenado is not going to have guys take away votes from his team. I know Blackman early in the year was people were saying, oh, is Charlie Blackman the MVP? No, look at the Washington Nationals. Bryce Harper, clearly one of the best players in baseball, having one of his best years. The rest of his team, Daniel Murphy's having a fantastic year again. Ryan Zimmerman started off real hot, tailed off a little bit, but still overall great numbers. Anthony Rendon, where's he in the conversation? The league leader in WAR? We know that these sabermetrics are used in voting nowadays. That's why Nolan's got so many gold gloves. They're using UZR, using defensive runs saved. So Rendon's got to be part of the conversation. Those guys could take votes away from each other. Paul Goldschmidt, he's having a great year. The D-backs, you know, if they continue to do what they do, get in the playoffs, great. I think if you put Paul Goldschmidt's numbers against Nolan Arenado's at the end of the year, they're going to look very, very similar, both playing in very good offensive environments. I think Nolan will get the leap there because he's got such great defense. Not that Goldschmidt's bad. Nolan's defense is better. Look at the Dodgers. The Dodgers are a superstar team without a superstar. I mean, yeah. Corey Seager is really good. Bellinger has done what he's done. That's fine. But are they really they're playing like an all-time great team right now, but do you think they're really going to be an all-time great team? How many Hall of Famers are on that roster? Kershaw.
Yeah.
Maybe Seager, maybe Bellinger, whatever. They're in their first, second, third years. You can't say that yet.
Right.
I mean, look, that team is mostly full of castoffs who other teams traded away. It's Chris Taylor. It is Justin Turner. It's, you know, Yasmani Grandal. It's Chase Utley. It's Logan Forsyth. It's, you know, guys that aren't necessarily homegrown talent and really not guys who are going to be talked about for years to come. They're really just a perfectly constructed regular season team. Will it work in the playoffs? I don't know. It hasn't before. Everyone's like, oh, the Dodgers, they're clearly going to win the World Series this
year.
Yeah,
that's what
– They went 42-8 for a stretch in 2013. How did that work
right,
out?
Right, and not only that, but, like, are we sure – everybody is just all about, oh, Clayton Kershaw, when he comes back, he's going to – yeah, maybe. Back injuries are nothing to screw with, though.
He did well last year, sure.
Right, but that doesn't necessarily mean –
we also saw what happened in the
right,
playoffs.
Exactly. And that doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to just come back and be healthy. It's that I think we were way too – the Bob Nightingales of the world were way too quick to say this is the team that has already won the World Series. This is a Dodgers-Astros World Series that's locked up in 2017. How the hell – not only that, Yu Darvish has only pitched in the playoffs twice. Last time he pitched in the postseason, he was awful.
Lost both of his starts.
So, like, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Not only is it so difficult to predict that – but it's impossible to predict short series. Do I think the Dodgers will lose 4 games out of a 7-game series? No. Do I think it's possible the Dodgers can lose 3 out of 5? Yeah. That's what short series do to you.
Yeah.
So
my final thought on this, I think Nolan Arenado can easily sneak in, especially if the Rockies do make the playoffs and he is still their unquestioned leader by the time, barring an injury.
As dumb as that is, it's a huge component.
Well, it is and it isn't anymore as much because we saw Mike Trout win it last year on a bad team, but he had to have wildly better numbers than anybody else.
You have to blow the doors off if you are on a bad team. Right.
Right. And so Nolan Arenado is not going to blow the doors off. There are going to be guys who have better offensive numbers than Nolan Arenado at the end of the year. But you put it all together with the Rockies component, the fact they have not been back to the playoffs in 8 years. If he does get them to the playoffs and he is the main reason why, you're going to see a lot of people side with Nolan Arenado, in my opinion, for NL MVP this year.
I like it. I like it. The Rockies will play this afternoon. We're recording on Thursday morning. They got a 1-10 finale against the Mets. Phillies come to town tomorrow for 3 straight, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then it's an off day and then a weird series, 2 games in Cleveland. Off day. 2 games in Cleveland, off day.
They've had so many off days.
3
lately.
Games in Miami, very strange.
Which I'm sure they like.
Yeah,
but,
definitely.
You know,
I mean, the rain out was one coming off of an off day, which was weird. But yeah, then 2 off days in a span of 4 days, sandwiched around a 2-game series on the road, very strange. And then you come home to take on the Braves for 4. The Braves are terrible, and the Brewers rather, who have not played well as of late. So these are the stretches that the Rockies need to assert themselves, because when you get into September, that's big kid time. I mean, that's when the D-backs come to town, and then that series, that stretch, that road trip on the road for 4 at Los Angeles and 4 at Arizona, that is the make-or-break portion of this stretch run. September 7th to September 14th, as Anthony pointed out, that's it. Because then you come back, and you get the Padres – then you're on the road in San Francisco and San Diego, and then you get the Marlins at home. So once you make it through that 8-game road trip, then you have winnable games toward the end of the season. That last series of the year, Brian Kilpatrick's pinned tweet notwithstanding, I don't think the Rockies are going to be playing for a division title against the Dodgers in that last series of the year at Coors Field from Friday the 29th of September until October 1st. But That one road trip, you got to win leading up to that, and you got to win coming out of that, because if you play 8 games on the road in Los Angeles and Arizona and you lose 6 of those, you're putting yourself in a huge hole.
Yep.
God forbid they lose any more than 6. Oof.
Oof. Please don't. Oof. Please don't do that. Oof. That would suck.
Yeah. Jonathan Lucroy in the lineup today. We'll see if he actually plays or if he's actually real. Greg Holland cut himself with a knife at home in a kitchen accident, quote unquote. So he's been unavailable, but hopefully he'll be okay. You know, whatever. We'll see. I guess that's about it, and that's about all, right? Is there anything else?
I think so. I think we're good.
Faith Day on Sunday. Get excited.
Oh boy!
At least they're not the Cardinals. Cardinals denied a press credential to Outsports for Faith Day, becoming the first professional organization to ever deny Outsports a press credential, saying that Major League Baseball does not credential blog sites, which somebody better tell every blog site that's ever been to a baseball game.
Every literal blog site who's ever gotten a press credential, which is all of them.
They credential people who host podcasts named after dinosaurs. Like, they don't have standards.
Yeah, yeah, there's literally no standards to get a press credential in MLB. Unless you're gay.
Apparently.
So, good job, nice Cardinals. Job, Cardinals. Good job.
It's going to be – this is what you want. You want to get to August and be talking about – like, we've had 2-3 episodes this year, we've talked about the minor league system, whereas by this point last year, we would have done nothing but talk about the minor league system.
Yeah, we would have gone through, like, from...
Boise Hawks!
From Boise to Albuquerque and then back
Which
down.
We love doing, but it's the much worse alternative to getting to actually talk about a playoff push at the major league level. So even though it makes you anxious, even though it puts the pit in your stomach, even though you have chest pains from it, knowing that the next 2 months will make or break your baseball fandom for the year, you wouldn't want it any other way, you know? So we'll see.
So, yep.
All right.
Sounds good.
I guess that's it. I'm going to head down to Coors Field today and hopefully watch them not suck. Herman Marquez on the hill. He's been great lately, so.
Yes, he has.
Cool. All right. We'll do it again next week. Talk to you then.
Hooray.
Love you. Bye.